name's Michelle Owu. I'm carrying out this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another Project. The date today is the 23rd of August 2009, and the time is now 8:22 a.m. Could you tell me your name, your age, and where you come from, please?
My name's Tom Woodhouse, and I come from, I live in West Kensington. I'm Irish. I also partly live in Ireland. And my age, what age am I? Oh God, I've forgotten again. 54. I'm 54. And proud.
How are you feeling?
I'm out and proud and 54. Sorry?
How are you feeling?
Really excited. It's such good fun. I mean, the thing about these art things, I did one before with Spencer Tunick, and even though from outside they look really, really boring, when you're actually in the middle of it as a sort of as a participant, they're so exciting and so it's a way of thinking about art which is much completely different from just looking and being a passive observer. It's extraordinary. I really do enjoy it. And you do get this a little bit of a performance buzz, I suppose, what people have when they're on stage, you know. I really liked it. The one I did with Spencer Tunick was there was 4,500 people.
Where was that?
Naked on a sea wall on Midsummer's Day on the port of Dublin, and it was fucking freezing. You know, so obviously one's equipment wasn't up to scratch, but we were all in the same boat, and it was just so funny. There was kind of pregnant women and fat guys and kind of, you know, weightlifting guys with shaved body hair and tattooed guys and people with, you know, women with pierced labias. And it was just wonderful seeing what is underneath the everyday. And I quite like this project because there's a kind of quotidian, everyday aspect to it as well. You know, there's this notion that simply by climbing up onto a plinth, it's only the plinth which has the significance, whereas normally the plinth is a kind of it's a minor object. It's not even considered. It's just something that the artwork stands on. But by climbing on the plinth, you simply by the act of getting up onto the plinth, you become an artwork. And as a sort of the way it's done through lottery sort of thing, it means that sort of just it's the average people. Yeah, well, if there is an average person who wants to stand on a plinth in Trafalgar Square, but there's an averageness about it. And so it's an opportunity. It's a Warholian. It's Warholian. It's that 15 minutes of fame, except it's a whole fucking hour. I don't know if I can cope.
What are you going to do?
15 minutes would be much easier, you know. Could you not do for 15 minutes?
What are you going to do with your hour?
I got asked yesterday afternoon, and I had thought about this before. Originally, when I first applied for it, I had been in Trafalgar Square, and I was thinking about the loneliness of the other three plinths, the men standing on the other three plinths, you know, were kind of being ignored because there was all this excitement on the empty plinth. And so my first idea was to bronze myself complete as a living statue and become a bronze statue on the plinth, so as to keep them company, so as to make a foursome, make a little, you know, we're all in this together, chaps, sort of thing. But I couldn't do that because it was the last minute. So I thought, well, what do I do on Sunday morning? And I thought, yeah, sit around, drink coffee, and cruise gaydar for sex. Fantastic. Why not just do what you do anyway? Except you're doing it on a plinth and you're doing it as an artwork. So I thought, well, I'll do that. So I thought I'll get on the plinth, take a photo of the square, which I'm very interested in doing anyway, because I think the perspective and the light of this art in the morning would be great. Put that on I've created this special gaydar profile, and then I'll send this message with this photograph, and on the profile I'll make an explanation as to what's happening and why I'm doing it. And the points I'm trying to make would be, one of the main is that I just like the juxtaposition of something which is normally done very, very privately. Looking for sex on the internet is a very private occupation. It's a bit like sort of, well, it's kind of not far from masturbation, really, is it? And which generally is done privately, which, you know, these days anything goes, darling. And to do that in probably, when you think about it, it's probably one of the most public places on the planet, Trafalgar Square. And you're on a plinth, and you're doing something private and secret, and nobody knows that you're doing it. So it's got that sort of transgressive quality about it, which I quite liked. But, and also, I was thinking that the other three plinths are generally are celebrations of military heroism, which is, broadly speaking, men killing men. So I thought it would be, as a little moment in the world, to have an hour when the idea of men having sex with men rather than men killing men was celebrated on this empty plinth in Trafalgar Square. So it has a sort of little bit of a story to it. And I think there's lots of other ideas about sort of the internet and the way in which people communicate, the evolving interiority about the lives which we live, because we communicate through texts or emails or internet much more than actually verbally, to some extent. Yeah, it's kind of, you know, fun can keep going, but I think it's just fun, and I just like the idea of the funness of it. And you know, people always say, is it art? And you think, well, who gives a fuck? You know, it's just a laugh. Why not? You know, what better way to have a laugh than stand on a plinth on a Sunday morning?
Why did you, what was it about the project that appealed to you, that made you want to apply?
I've been looking at a lot of work, which was like the guy that was running through Tate Gallery, that one, you know, and things like that. And I quite like those because they always make me think. And this one particularly, it felt like it was particularly momentous, and it was particularly important. And it says something very much about what it is to be a human being, and very much what it is to live in London and be in London. I don't know. I just got excited about it, and I love Anthony Gormley's things. You know, he always does nice stuff. It's just that those things in the sea. In Merseyside, and not keen on the Angel of the North. I think it's just become sullied by its ubiquity. But I do like him, and I like those figures on the buildings. I like those. So yes.
You mentioned before that I think you're originally from Ireland. Is that right?
I'm from Belfast originally. I grew up in the Civil War in Belfast, and there's an element of this in, because I was a Catholic, being brought up in the 1950s and 1960s in Belfast, Catholics were very much excluded from public spaces. There was a kind of apartheid in being a Catholic. Public buildings were Protestant. Everything in a place like Belfast, even every tree, every bus stop is either Protestant or Catholic, but very much public spaces were Protestant, and they were the place for Protestants, and as a Catholic, of course, I was excluded. So there is a resonance of taking over such an extraordinary public space in memory of a childhood in which one was excluded as a Catholic from public spaces. So yes, that connects. I hadn't thought about that. Thank you.
When did you move over?
I've lived in London for about 30 years, but I also have a little cottage on top of a hill, on top of a mountain in Donegal, which I bought 10 years ago, because I decided that I would go and live in the country on top of a mountain, surrounded by sheep, because I wanted to give up taking drugs, drinking alcohol, and smoking cigarettes, and it took me 10 years.
Did you manage it?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had a cigarette for 2 years. That was the most difficult bit. drugs were quite easy because, you know, you're on top of money, you can't buy any. So, you know, that was quite simple. And anyway, my veins had mostly collapsed by that stage, so it wasn't really much fun anymore. And alcohol, well, that took 5 years. But, yeah, it was... And I did hit rock bottom. I don't know what that means, but I know you're supposed to say that. it was all rather tragic, but I've come out the other side.
Was it a lifestyle that you felt you had to get away from?
The
drugs and the drink, or?
It is quite destructive, especially if you're multi-addicted, you know, in the most extreme form, because, you know, I was just like a hoover. Anything that was mind-altering, you know, heroin, opium, Special K, cocaine. I used to inject cocaine, you know, and all that sort of thing. And that's for alcohol. I mean, you know, the day wasn't a day unless you'd have half a bottle of vodka before you get out of bed.
Were your friends and peers doing much the same thing? Or?
I had lots of acquaintances, most addicts will tell you, I mean, I had lots of acquaintances. But of course, you know, once you start, stop everything, stop buying them drinks or stop taking drugs with them, then they all disappear. And I suppose friends from the past, they'd all sort of wandered away because they got a bit bored with it all. You know, watching somebody self-destruct is not very attractive. And it's a bit boring, really, for them. I find it fascinating, one always finds oneself fascinating, no matter how dull one is, really.
Have you still got the cottage?
Yeah. It's still there. I just moved to London, permanently back to London, about 6 weeks ago. So, and I kept on my apartment in London, and my flat in London. And I moved back there. And one of the things that I'm doing is, of course, this is the first time I've lived in London sober in my entire life. So I'm doing all these exciting things. Like I go to the lectures at lunchtime at the National Gallery and St. Martin's in the Fields concerts and the proms. I'm doing this.
Had you ever done that before?
I had done intermittently, but you know, there was always, you'd always organise something and then you get drunk and not turn up and things like that. So yes, I had done quite a lot. I mean, I used to lecture at Cambridge University in criminology, so you know I did function despite being drunk all the time. So you know I did lots of those things, but I'm kind of doing it in much more concentrated form, possibly in a slightly addicted form. I've kind of replaced my addiction to alcohol with my addiction to free concerts. That can't be a bad thing, can it? No.
Worst things to be addicted.
There's worse things, yes. And I've managed to cut down on my clothes habit.
Did you have a serious clothes habit?
Doesn't every homosexual? It goes with the territory.
How would you describe yourself as a person? I think you basically said you've got quite an addictive personality in some way.
As a person,
How would you paint a picture of yourself as a person?
Oh, I don't know. I really find that sort of question so pointless, really. I think for everybody, because we're not people in the sense of a fixed point. We're a kind of flow of things. We're history. We're a narrative, and I couldn't say. I could say who I am today.
Yeah, who are you today?
Who am I today? I'm
disappointed.
I'm being a bit Melvyn Bragg, really. You know, I'm kind of sitting here with my legs crossed on this nice armchair, kind of, you know, being sort of late night review, art review, sort of speaking in a kind of measured tone of voice about the nature of art and my place within it.
Did you choose three words on your profile?
Yes.
I can't remember what those were.
Short, wrinkled, and bad tempered. Short, wrinkly, and bad tempered. And I chose those three words, slightly tongue in cheek, but also I chose those three words because I had a photograph on my gaydar profile saying short, wrinkly, and bad tempered, because I just wanted to, you know, people tend to have expectations before they meet you, and you want to sort of lay out, well, I'm not 6 foot five. I'm 54 years of age, and I can be a little bit abrasive on occasion. So I wanted people to know that, so I wouldn't have to have people coming to call on me for casual sex, and for them to complain, you know, well, you're not like you, not like what I expected. You're 5 foot four and three quarters, and you're 54, and you've got wrinkles. Well, you know, look at the photograph, read the profile.
Are you expecting to get a lot of responses?
No. I don't really expect to get any responses. Well, possibly abusive, sort of, what the fuck is all this about, you know, and does this mean that I'm going to be on television, you know, this is a confidential thing, and people get very nervous about it, you know. But it is quite extraordinary, you know, people do respond in terms of, you know, get worried about being outed in a way. But yeah, you know, they put their photographs in all sorts of conditions of dress and undress on the internet, available to the entire world, and information about themselves. They freely give over their telephone numbers, and they randomly just go to strangers' houses and have casual sex. But if you say, well, I'm doing something in relation to this art project in Trafalgar Square, somehow that's different. I really don't understand it, but then, you know, I don't seek to understand people.
Is that a site that you've used a lot?
Yeah, I started it because I was living, as I was saying, I was living on top of a mountain surrounded by sheep, and, you know, there's not, it's kind of, I think it was about 50 miles to the nearest gay bar, you know, and also I was trying to grab a drink, so I was staying away from bars anyway, but it was just a way that people, these dating sites, whether gay or not, do provide a resource for people living inside, you know, isolated situations, and those can be isolated by geography if they live in the country, or isolated because they're men who want to have sex with men but they're married, and they're, or for some other reason they can't be open about their sexuality, or they live in countries, you know, it's quite extraordinary. You get, you know, people from China, you get messages from people from China, and you think, well, how extraordinary, you know. Somebody's sending me a photograph of his penis from sort of Beijing. And you think, well, it's just a penis is a penis, they all look the same. But even so, you kind of think, what extraordinary lives. This is one of the things about the internet. I mean, you do connect in this kind of global way, even when it's about an issue like men having sex with men.
How else did you spend your time when you were in the cottage, when you were in Donegal?
Looking out the window. Lot of morning television, lot of videos, lot of going to the shops to buy vodka, reading.
But you weren't working?
No. I think that work had faded somewhat. I mean, there were more important. There was a greater and higher agenda, which was survival, which I think always takes over, doesn't it, eventually. Yes.
And are you planning on staying in London?
Yep, I'm looking for a job. I'm trying to find some work. Because I haven't worked for about 10 years, and because I'm an older man, I'm applied to do voluntary work for various voluntary, one of which is Stonewall and one of which is Terence Higgins Trust. To build up a CV, but I mean, I'm not even sure what a CV is, really, because I've never had to deal with actually applying for a job before.
Have you not?
No, because I don't know, in academia, certainly in the times when I was in academia, there was a certain amount of, you know, if you'd published this, or, you know, there was a kind of nod and a wink. That's how you got jobs. I mean, you filled in a form as an application, but I mean, the interview was a formality. Broadly.
You were a criminologist.
I did work on domestic violence and policing a gay man was one of the things, but also mainly I was interested in the microeconomics and micro and macroeconomics of burglary and how burglary and how burglary operates as an economic system, and its relationship to insurance claims, its relationship to secondary markets, second-hand goods markets, its relationship to balance of payments in relation to Japan, and just seeing it as a rational activity, which is one way in which we can look at property crime, as opposed to the kind of being trapped in the sort of these people are bad story, or you know, why do they do it? Well, you know, they do things to get money, you know. Being a junkie is a very expensive little day-to-day chore, and if you have to burgle, you burgle. And that was one of my interests, one of my main interests. I like that. I love criminology. I think criminology is fantastically interesting, because it's, you know, it's about, it's quotidian, it's everybody's life. It's, we all encounter crime. We all are criminals in many ways. And we all have weird views and fears and anxiety. So it sort of builds into so much. You can't not find it interesting. But I suppose anybody would say that about their own subject. But I can't imagine. I mean, I could go to geography. Could you be really interested in geography? Not after my experience with Oxbow Lakes. I just can't. You know, there are some things that you just can't be interested in, and but criminology, I just think I defy anyone not to just find criminology one of the most fascinating subjects of all time. So there you are, there's a little plug. Become a criminologist. Stop all this interviewing people. It's not going to get you anywhere. Absolutely nowhere.
Are you looking forward to it?
I'm exhausted, aren't I?
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I think I've said enough.
Thank you very much indeed.
And was that all right?